You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We're broadcasting live today from the Radio Row at Health Action. Health Action is a health care conference put on by Families USA here in Washington, D.C., and later on in the program, we'll be having, as we did yesterday, a number of fascinating guests on the topics of healthcare in the United States. But it being the first hour of our program, of course, it is Senator Bernie Sanders' Brunch with Bernie, our national town hall meeting where the guy that I think of as America's senator, although Vermonters know he's theirs, is on the line with us. Senator Sanders?
Good to be with you, Tom.
Hey, Bernie, it's great to have you with us. You know, you were talking, you've been on this program for 8, 9 years, a long, long time. And from day one, you have been talking about inequality. And I understand that that's going to be a theme of President Obama's speech on Tuesday. It's like finally the Democratic Party is getting with the program.
Yeah, I think so. I think we have made some progress. You know, we've had in the last couple of years Occupy Wall Street doing a great job. Pope Francis has made the point that income and wealth inequality, not just in the United States, of course, but throughout the world, is a moral issue. And I agree with that. We are living in a period where in the United States today, Tom, the top 1% owns 38% of the wealth of America. And what people are shocked to hear is that the bottom 60%, the majority of the people, own all of 2.3%.
Wow.
You got one family, the Walton family of Walmart, owning more wealth than the bottom 40% of the American people.
Which means that's more wealth than the entire African-American population of this country.
Yes, I would strongly suspect that's the case.
That's
one family. One family. And then in terms of income, wealth is what you accumulate over your lifetime. In terms of income, the last studies that we have seen from 2009 to 2012 tell us that 95% of all new income goes to the top 1%. So most people, many people listening to the show, maybe they got a 1% increase, maybe they got zero, maybe they lost, their wages went down. So of all of the new income, all of the, if you like, wage increases, 95% in the last few years have gone to the top 1%. And you're living at a moment where wealth and income inequality in this country is worse than any time than 1928, just before the Great Depression. And obviously there are people who would argue, economists would argue, that that was what precipitated the Great Depression, that so few had so much and so many had so little. And when so few have not enough money to spend, you don't create jobs and so forth and so on. So this issue of income and wealth inequality is a huge issue, and it touches on another huge issue. And that is getting back to Citizens United, and we're celebrating the fourth anniversary of that disastrous Supreme Court decision, which in the midst of all of this income and wealth inequality, what Citizens United said to the wealthiest people in this country, well, guess what? You know, you own the oil companies, you own the media, and now we give you an opportunity to own the United States government. And people like the Koch brothers, who, by the way, are the second wealthiest family in the country, somewhere around $75 billion, what they are now doing is spending huge amounts of money, trying to create an America that works for millionaires and billionaires. And they're working with other right-wing billionaires to do that. In the last election, the Koch brothers spent something like $400 million. There is reason to believe that they're going to be spending more in the future. And this is just a complete undermining of what democracy is about. It is extraordinarily frightening. They have an agenda which is way out of touch with where the American people are. But because of their wealth and because of their power, they can elect people to support that very minority perspective. And, you know, this is just the huge issue that we have got to deal with. Other issues that are out there that we're dealing with right now is this whole business of the NSA. My own view is when the NSA files virtually every phone call, the record of every phone call made in the United States of America, to me, that is a clear-cut violation of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. I don't think there's too much doubt about that. We've recently had the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board also made the point that they think that what is going on is unconstitutional. For those people living in Vermont or near Vermont, we're going to be doing a town meeting on February 1st, Saturday, February 1st at Montpelier City Hall, where we're going to have at 1 p.m. and we're going to have David Cole and Heidi Boghossian, two very strong civil liberties advocates, come, and we'll have a town meeting discussing where we are right now with regard to privacy rights and constitutional rights in this country. Tom, we have, just as chairman of the Veterans Committee, I have just introduced the most comprehensive, I think, sweeping veterans legislation introduced in several decades. And what this bill would do is not only address the unfair cutback in pension benefits for military retirees, but would also expand VA health care for our veterans, provide dental care for our veterans, make sure that we address the problems of sexual assault, that we protect veterans in the event of another shutdown to make sure that they get their disabled vets, gets the checks that they need. A whole lot of stuff in this bill, which I think is going to go a long way if passed, to providing support to men and women who put their lives on the line to defend us, and many of whom are struggling today. I'm very proud that this legislation has the support of every major veterans organization in the country, and I'm going to be working hard to see that it gets passed. So that's those are some of the issues. Last but not least, obviously, is that when I get back to Washington on Monday night, I think we're going to be looking at, once again, the need to extend long-term unemployment benefits to those workers who have lost those benefits. And we're talking about 1.6 million workers who have been unemployed for long periods of time, who are having a very difficult job finding work, and who are now kind of, you know, many of them are struggling quite terribly because they don't have any income coming in. So we want to see if we can get that bill passed. Republican friends are saying that, well, gee, they'd love to do it, but they need to cut from someplace else. Well, when Bush was president, they passed extended unemployment five separate times. It wasn't a political issue then, but apparently now that Obama's president has become a political issue, I think that's unfortunate. And this issue about extending unemployment benefits, long-term unemployment benefits, is not just protecting some of the most vulnerable people in the country and their kids and their families. It is also protecting our economy, because if this 1.6 million people have no revenue, no income to spend, what the CBO tells us, it will cost us about 200,000 jobs, because they're not spending money in their communities, and reduce the GDP next year by about 0.2%. We also have on the pipeline the absolute need to raise the minimum wage. Right now, the national minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Many states, including Vermont, have done better. But legislation has been introduced to raise the national minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. I think we can go higher than that, but $10.10 is a good start. And it means that what we don't want to see is somebody working 40 or 50 hours a week and still living in dire poverty. So this would not accomplish all of our problems, but it would take us a step forward.
Definite step forward. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row here in Washington, D.C. from the Health Action Conference, Families USA. By the way, a quick shout out to Davis Community Media, our newest affiliate, a cable system in Davis, California, which is also where the University of California, Davis is, serving that town and surrounding towns. Greetings. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's always great when new radio or TV stations or cable systems pick up our show. We'll be back with more Brunch with Bernie. Check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. And welcome back. And, Senator, you're still with us?
I'm right here.
Okay, pick up phone calls?
Let's do it.
Okay, Karen in Fort Washakie, Wyoming, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you kindly, Senator Sanders. I appreciate your comments about equality, as the state motto for the state of Wyoming is the equality state. However, we have not been granted the expansion of Medicaid for probably 2 years. Certainly last year it was not afforded citizens of Wyoming, and again this year. I'm wondering your perception about Section 1 of Amendment 14 and how states can choose to support Medicaid expansion and other states force their citizens not to receive those benefits.
Well, Karen, let me say, as you know, Wyoming is not the only state that has rejected that provision of the Affordable Care Act. It is literally hard for me to understand why, given the fact that the federal government is covering virtually all of the cost. And what Wyoming and other states are saying is, yeah, we got a whole lot of folks who have no health insurance at all. Yep, the federal government is going to provide Medicaid to them at no cost to the state, but we choose not to participate. And they say that at a time, Karen, when some 45,000 people every single year in this country die because they don't get to a doctor when they should, mostly because they don't have any health insurance. So I think that is incredibly callous and irresponsible. And I would just hope that the people of Wyoming and other states just organize and get involved politically to make sure that they change that decision. Now, having said that, and I know Tom is at a healthcare conference, let me repeat what I have said many times. I think the Affordable Care Act is a modest step forward. Many of the provisions in it originally came from Republican think tanks, conservative think tanks. I think we've got to go further, and I think we have to ask ourselves the question of why we are the only major country on earth that does not guarantee health care to all people as a right through a national health care program, and secondly, why we end up spending almost twice as much per person on health care as any other country. So I think expanding Medicaid in Wyoming and elsewhere is exactly the right thing to do, but we have got to go further, and we need in my mind, a Medicare for all single payer system, which will provide health care to all people, and will do it a lot more cost effectively than the current dysfunctional system.
Bernie, we just have a minute. Apropos of that, yesterday I interviewed Wendell Potter, who used to be a senior vice president with one of these big insurance companies. He said that they are banding together to throw millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars into Vermont to stop the implementation of single payer.
Look, that's what these guys do. You know, most of us believe that what you want out of a healthcare system is you want high quality, you want universality, everybody in it, and you want cost effectiveness. What these guys in the insurance industry and in the drug industry, the pharmaceutical industry, want, they want an opportunity to make as much money as they can off of people's illness. And am I surprised that they will throw everything they can against Vermont's effort to pass a single payer system? No, it doesn't surprise me at all.
It's distressing, though, to hear that. Senator Bernie Sanders with us as our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. More of your questions for Senator Sanders right after this. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Health Action Conference at Families USA in Washington, D.C., and Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, and let's start picking up some phone calls here. Ed in Sun City, West Arizona. Hey, Ed, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, hi, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. Thanks for taking my call. Real quick, I was just on the Internet looking at the 18-mile New Hampshire Rebellion Walk. For the campaign for finance reform, and I guess we need 34 states to do anything, you know, to change the Constitution. I was just wondering what Vermont is doing and what maybe we all could do to make this happen.
Well, that's a great and important question, and the answer is that Vermont has already passed a resolution in support of a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. Some, as I understand it, we now have 15 other states in addition to Vermont have done the same, and we have some 500 local governments have passed resolutions that in one form or another denounce the Citizens United ruling. So I think we are seeing a strong grassroots movement, but we've got to go further. I would very much like to see the President of the United States come out strongly in support of a constitutional amendment. And then I'd like to see us organize all over the country around that. So to answer your question, we have made some progress, but Ed, we have got to go a lot further. As I indicated a moment ago, when you have folks like the Koch brothers and other billionaires prepared to spend unlimited amounts of money to buy politicians at the federal and state and local level, you have an absolute threat to American democracy. You have the makings of an oligarchy, a nation in which a handful of billionaires control the political and economic life of the nation. So we've got a lot of work to do, and I can't think of any issue that is more important than that. Because if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the economy, if you're concerned about global warming, if you're concerned about children's needs, you have to be concerned about campaign funding, and you have to be concerned about Citizens United. Because if current trends continue, these guys are going to have so much power to buy and sell politicians that it is going to be very, very hard to have a government representing ordinary people. So it's a huge issue.
It's the robber barons all over again. Guido in Chester, Vermont. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. Thank you very much for taking the time out. I was just listening to your last comments, and I'm sitting here going, yes, yes, yes. Corporations make the laws in this country, not the Congress. As far as producing jobs in this country, what would be the tsunami against levying tariffs against foreign manufacturers to make manufacturing in the United States more feasible?
Well, I think that's a great question. And the answer is the tsunami would be every major corporation in America, the Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, the Koch brothers, and all of the billionaires who benefit from our disastrous trade policies, and that's NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, and now the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement is coming up. Bottom line here is that in the last, I believe, 13 years or so, we have lost some 60,000 factories. And as my fellow Vermonter from Chester, Vermont, knows that in our state in the last 10 or so years, we've lost about a quarter of our manufacturing jobs, and that's true just all over America. And those were the jobs that paid middle-class wages. So what we have got to do is create a set of policies that say, okay, trade is a good thing. But the goal of trade is to increase jobs in America, to improve wages in America, and not to participate in a race to the bottom where our people are forced to compete against folks in Vietnam or Bangladesh or China who are earning, you know, very, very low wages. So we need a new trade policy in America, which results in companies rebuilding our manufacturing base here rather than shutting down plants and moving them abroad.
Howard in Hollywood, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, you left GATT out of your list.
Oh, right.
That's beside the point. I suggest that politics is marketing, and I suggest that the Democrats are the worst marketers in the world. I don't know why we are not having hearings on Edwin Meese shutting down the government. This issue would carry to the next election, and I don't know why we're not having hearings on the caucus room meetings, which Tom does a great video on. I think these two things give us the election, the next election, if they were promoted. And who do I have to go to lobby on having hearings on these two things?
Well, it's a good start. You've gone to me, and I will spread your thoughts. I think you're right. I would say it's not just marketing. It is the mentality of many Democrats is really different than Republicans. Republicans are a lot more tough. They're a lot more visceral. They're prepared to really go to the core and for their base. And Democrats, I think, often are, you know, much more civic-minded. They're more genteel. They are more responsible, if you like. You know, so Republicans are saying, hey, you know, we're going to shut down the government. I don't care. This is what I want. You know, do away with the Affordable Care Act, or you don't make this cut, or you don't. You know, hey, no problem. We're going to shut down the government. Well, for the first time in the history of America, we're not going to pay our debts. And yes, it may lead to an international depression, a world depression. But hey, this is what we believe. And, you know, Democrats are not as tough as that. But I think your point is well taken. I think Democrats have sharpened their message. Be tough. And the good news for the Democrats is what they believe in is a lot more consistent.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
More with Senator Bernie Sanders right after the news at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back. And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Health Action Conference put on by Families USA here on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. It's our first hour. It's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. Senator, you're still with us?
I am right here.
Okay,
Howard from Florida had called, and I think we got cut off before I made the last point that I wanted to. And he talked about the Democrats being weak in marketing and so forth. But here's the additional point. If you understand that the ideology of the Republican Party is an ideology which maybe has the support of 15 or 20% of the American people, because most people don't think we should give more tax breaks to the rich or large corporations. Most people do not believe that we should cut Social Security, Medicare or Medicaid or education or wipe out the Environmental Protection Agency. That's not where most people are at. So Howard's point is a good point, that it is somewhat absurd that we're looking at a hotly contested November coming up as to who will control the Senate when you have one party that represents the interest of maybe the voters of maybe 15 or 20% of the people.
And therefore, they've got to play bully in order to get that kind of bizarre agenda through.
Well, they do, and they need billionaires behind them. But, you know, it's very clear, I think, the Democrats, as Howard indicated, have not done a good job in exposing what right-wing extremism is about, because that is not a popular ideology, not with the Tea Party. You got a lot of these guys, for example, in the Tea Party. They're angry guys for a whole lot of reasons. But you know what? They don't think we should cut Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid because they benefit from those programs. And they don't think we should give more tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country because they're not those people. So we got a lot of work in front of us in terms of educating the American people about what goes on and organizing people and getting them involved in the political process.
Amen. Andrea in push the button here a little harder. Andrea in Palm Springs, California, watching Free Speech TV on the direct.
Yes, hello. I'm so gratified to be able to speak to both of you. This is regarding voter fraud and the whole campaign in that regard. Since the voter fraud block doesn't target the vote by mail situations, I always vote by mail myself, I believe there should be support for from them as well as every faction for a bill to require vote by mail exclusively coast to coast, and it would eliminate the lines, poll workers, the voting machine shenanigans, and give 100% paper trail for all recounts. And Washington State has already instituted this, and I don't see how anyone could oppose this.
Well, thank you, Andrea, and you make a good point, and I think, as you've indicated, the state of Washington has already moved in that direction. Other states are, in general, moving in that direction. Especially those states who really want to see a large voter turnout, who believe that what democracy is about is doing everything that we can to get people to participate in the political process. On the other hand, what's very clear, there are a number of Republican conservative states where the goal of those governors and those legislatures is not to increase voter turnout, but to decrease voter turnout, to make it as hard as possible for poor people or old people who might vote against the Republicans to participate in the political process. So I think those states that are interested in expanding democratic rights are moving in that direction. But as you well know, Andrea, there are states that are moving in exactly the opposite direction.
Joe in Minneapolis, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Tom and Bernie, I just want to say a big fan of both of you guys, what you represent, you know, your ideology. I just had a quick question for Senator Sanders. I represent a member of an organization nationwide, the Campaign for Mass Party of Labor, massparty of labor.org, and I'm reminded of a Gore Vidal quote, which is that the United States essentially has one property party with two right wings. And another friend of mine has said, you know, the Democratic Party is neither a party nor is it democratic. It's a fundraising organization. You've talked a lot about Citizens United, basically the state of electoral politics in the nation. And within the last electoral cycle, we've seen in Seattle with Kashama Sawan, an independent candidate. We've seen now the Chicago Teachers Union is talking about launching an electoral platform, and especially voters in Lorain County, Ohio, electing 24 independent Labor Party candidates in local elections in December out of 26 who ran. Now, that's pretty spectacular in my estimation.
Joe, your question?
And the union electoral campaign, the question is, Senator Sanders, you've described yourself as a social democrat, a democratic socialist. What do you think about calling on the union leaders to form a political organization to fight for the working class of the United States of America against the two major parties?
Well, Joe, the truth of the matter is these guys have been thinking about these issues and thinking about the possibility of moving in that direction for quite a while. You know, I have heard Rich Trumka, the head of the AFL-CIO, and others just express enormous frustration at the inability of the Democrats to address the needs facing working families or unions in general. So they understand the issue. I mean, the other side of the issue is what they don't want to do is give the Republican Party complete control of the United States Congress and give them the opportunity to literally change electoral law that will make it so much more difficult for working families to get any power whatsoever. But, you know, I'm talking to you as somebody who has always been an independent, been outside of the two-party system. I caucus with the Democrats. Here in the state of Vermont, when I was mayor of Burlington, Vermont, we formed a third party or a third non-party party. And in our state capital now, I think we have the strongest third-party progressive representation of any place in the United States of America. So I think the idea of independent politics is absolutely a great idea. I think it has to be weighed in location after location to make sure that we don't do, you know, we don't give the Republicans a gift. But it's something that the people have got to be thinking about, absolutely.
Bernie, apropos of that, I was watching the news last night, and the Tea Party is giving a separate response to the State of the Union. So the Republicans have a party within their party, and so there's an official Republican response, and then there's going to be the official Mike Lee giving the official Tea Party response. They've been doing this for 3 years. Why can't the Progressive Caucus in the Democratic Party, maybe they need to come up with a brand and call it a party, but why isn't, you know, what am I missing here?
Well, you're not missing much. I mean, I think the Republicans will give, I think it's Mike Lee who gives the official response, and then other guys will do it through their own networks and their email list and so forth. But, you know, that's a good idea. I think we should be doing something like that.
Okay. Corky in Hilton, New York. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, Senator. I'm curious about this TPP. Is there language in there that says they will block any transaction tax on Wall Street?
Well, Corky, the answer is I probably can't give you the answer. I don't know that anyone has seen it yet who's outside of a very limited group of people, mostly corporate leaders. The dangers of the TPP are they continue the disastrous trade policies that we've had for a number of years, which have led to a decline in manufacturing jobs in the United States as companies ship jobs abroad. The dangers are that they give corporations just enormous power over governmental decisions in terms of being able to override environmental issues and to protect the needs of corporate America. But I can't give you a specific answer to that right now.
Marcia in Anger, North Carolina. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Well, hello, Senator Sanders, and thanks a lot, Tom. You stole my question, which was, can the progressive Democrats get a response to the State of the Union, since these guys just keep multiplying in their responses? So I'll ask you something else. Can you give us 1 year to prove to you that we want to get rid of this corporate influence in our politics by joining the Green Party, creating a fundraiser, and letting us run for a campaign and collect for you from now until the end of this year? I feel that it won't affect the midterms, because there's not that many Greens ready yet, and it won't affect the 2016, because if we're not successful, you can be out. We can all go back to being Dems. But give us a year. Go around and make speeches. People will support you. Let us see what we can do.
Well, you know, it's not a question of me having people do anything. It's people on themselves doing it themselves. Here in Vermont, you know, people are doing it. They're running outside of the two-party system, and as we heard earlier, in other states, people are doing that. So I think depending on the state, depending on the city that you are living in, depending on how progressive or not progressive the Democratic Party is, people should stand up and be prepared to move in any way they want, whether it's independents or Green Party or whatever else it may be.
Isn't another option doing what the billionaires, they sent out all those videos back in 2010 to Republicans saying, become a precinct committee person, we're going to, as the Tea Party, we're going to take over the Republican Party to basically...
I mean, I think what you're going to find, Tom, is depending on the level of consciousness in a given state or a given community, there are different approaches.
Hmm.
Certainly, the bottom line goal is the involvement of more working people, more young people, more people of color in the political process.
Right.
You know, some would like those people to get into the Green Party. Other people would like to do it independent progressive politics. Some would like to do it in the Democratic Party. I think probably at this moment, those decisions are going to be best made locally. See what works for giving clearance.
Makes perfect sense. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And check out Bernie's website over at Sanders.Senate.gov. It's a great news site. Plus, you can sign up for his newsletter, the Bernie Buzz. Welcome back. And Richard in Great Meadows, New Jersey, watching Free Speech TV on Dish TV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator. Hello.
Hello.
I was wondering, is there some way to give a tax incentive or some incentive to companies who hire long-term unemployed and tie that to bringing back the unemployment benefits? Because right now, if you're unemployed for more than 6 months, they don't even look at your resume. And to be honest, it's really, this is a hard, cold winter. And to cut off unemployment benefits now, it's really kind of cruel. You know.
Richard, do you know people who are in that boat?
Well, I lost my job 3 years ago, so I don't qualify. I know people are just losing their unemployment benefits now. They're just at the six-month limit, and that's pretty much where their state benefits are running out, and the emergency unemployment benefits would take over. And, you know, it's like 12 degrees out here. And these people, I know one fellow, he's been in a job for like 8 years. He just bought a house, and they closed. We all worked together. They closed the whole place, and we all lost our jobs. I was one of the first ones to go. These people just lost their jobs 6 months ago when they finally closed the doors. And these are people with graduate degrees. They're trying. I mean, nobody wants to be on unemployment. And these people are just struggling, trying to get by and keep their house going if they have a house, and, you know, just trying to get by. And, you know, it's pretty cold out here. You know, and if you go, you can't keep the house going, you know, what are you going to do?
Richard, you're absolutely right. You know, we're talking about 1.6 million Americans having lost their extended unemployment benefits. That number will grow as the year moves on. And right now, here in Vermont, we have had many, many days where the temperature is below zero, and you know that's true in other parts of the country. So Richard's point, I think, is absolutely right. You have people who are hurting. They have no income coming in. We can't turn our backs on those people. It is just not right. And not to mention, as I said earlier, it's bad for the whole economy. So we're going to do our best. I think there'll be a vote Monday night. So once again, make the fight to see that we have, that we're able to provide extended unemployment benefits.
Bernie, I think we just have about a minute and a half until the next break. Is there, it seems, actually it's 1 minute. It seemed that the Democrats didn't demand that to be in the budget on the assumption that they could easily shame the Republicans into going
out. Well, I don't know that it was that, Tom. You know, okay. it's, look, this is what we're dealing with. You're dealing with a House of Representatives run by right-wing extremists who, frankly, could care in most cases, probably not all, but in most cases could care less about what Richard was just talking about, that there are people who have lost their job, can't find a job, are trying to stay warm in the winter, feed their kids. Many of my Republican colleagues are much more interested in giving tax breaks to billionaires. So it is tough. And I think the Democratic negotiators probably did the very best that they could do, which, among other things, included not cutting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which is exactly what the Republicans wanted.
Yeah, that's a good
point. We're going to be back in that same situation a few weeks from now when we get to the debt ceiling. And Republicans are going to say, well, unless you do A, B, and C, make these draconian cuts, we're not going to pay our bills, and maybe we'll have a global depression. So, you know, it's a never-ending struggle against some very right-wing folks.
Senator Bernie Sanders, back with more of your questions for Bernie right after this. Tom Harmon broadcasting live from Health Action, the health conference put on by Families USA here on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. We're live from Radio Row, thus all the noise in the background. And Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. It's our first hour National Town Hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. And Donna in Rohnert Park, California, watching on Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
I was wondering what Bernie would think about Professor Richard Wolff and cooperatives and stuff as a, you know, doing that instead of always messing with the Republicans.
Are you talking, Donna, about promoting employee co-ops as an alternative to capitalism?
Yeah.
Well, I think, Donna, I think that is a great idea. And we have introduced legislation to kind of facilitate that, to make it easier for workers themselves to purchase and run the places in which they work. And we have some really good examples of that here in the state of Vermont, of worker co-ops, of ESOPs. I think Ohio is pretty strong in that area. I'm absolutely in favor of that for many, many reasons. I think clearly if a worker is part owner of the place where he or she is working, that company is not going to be shipped to China. Second of all, I think if you talk about democracy and the rights of people to have control over their lives, it means more to my mind than just voting every 2 years or every 4 years. It means having some say over your economic life, to being able to participate in decision-making that takes place in your company. And what these worker-owned companies end up doing is they involve people. They got a whole lot of ideas. People are invested. You see less absenteeism. People's morale is higher. So count me in, Donna, somebody who's a strong supporter of that approach.
Eugene, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio in Locust Grove, Virginia. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator. My question has to do with using the commons and also perhaps the results from research done by NIST and NIH to provide a base income to the poor. Also, a question about the possibility of that transaction, high-frequency trade transaction tax and the implementation of that being used.
Well, Eugene, there are a number of ideas out there in terms of a transaction fee on the sale of stocks. I support that. I think it is a progressive. I think if you exempt, you know, the little old ladies who own a few shares of stock and the small stock owners, you can do two things. Number one, you can raise a significant amount of revenue depending on the rates that you establish. And second of all, you can dampen the type of speculation that has been so rampant in recent years. So I'm strongly in favor of that. Your second part of your question, a base income for the poor, you know, I think makes, there are many ways that we can approach the issue. But number one, what we do have to establish is we have more people living in poverty today than any time in the history of the United States, 46.5 million, that we have the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth, that as the middle class disappears, many working people who have lost decent paying jobs and are now working in Walmarts or McDonald's are now in the ranks of the poor. And we have, in one way or another, to make sure that every person in this country at least has a minimal standard of living in which they can raise their kids with dignity, give their kids the opportunity to have a decent education. So your point is a good point. I mean, different people have different approaches, but we simply cannot turn our backs on a growing number of folks who are living in desperate poverty.
Mike in Chicago, listening on WCPT. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator Sanders, I want to talk about something that's not talked about, Afghanistan. We've been here 13 years, well over $1 trillion spent, let alone the dead Americans and mentally disabled and physically disabled Americans coming back. That will cost trillions of dollars to care for them the rest of their lives. The Karzai government is corrupt. They're growing heroin like crazy still. And Obama wants to keep troops, military advisors, 20.
Mike, your cell phone just croaked, but Bernie, you want to respond to that?
Well, you know, I think Mike makes some good points. He is right. You know, when we went into Afghanistan, the perception was that it would be a short war. We would overthrow the Taliban, establish a democratic government, bring our troops back home. Well, it hasn't quite worked out like that, and I think Mike's further point about the real damage done by this war to the men and women who serve in the U.S. military is absolutely right. I'm chairman of the Veterans Committee, and I can tell you that we're dealing with tens and tens and tens of thousands of young men and women who are coming home with traumatic brain injury, with post-traumatic stress disorder. And he's right. That the no one knows exactly, but the estimate for the cost of both the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq are somewhere between $3 and $6 trillion. And when you look at why we ended up growing the deficit when Bush came into office, it's not only his tax breaks for the rich, but also the unpaid for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, in my view, we should bring the troops home as soon as we possibly can.
Bernie, the final minute, your thoughts for the week?
Well, I think, you know, the bad news is that our country continues to struggle economically. We're seeing more wealth and power going to the people on top. But as one of our callers pointed out, we're also seeing signs of rebellion, signs of people all over the country standing up politically, organizing, electing people outside of the two-party system, or demanding that the Democrats become more progressive. And maybe I just want to conclude by having everybody understand that ideologically, these right-wing Republicans are way out of touch from where the American people are. And our job is to educate, to organize, to get people into the political process, and to make sure that the wealth and the energy of this country doesn't simply go to the people on top, but that we create an approach by which every man, woman, and child in this country has at least a minimum standard of living.
Brilliant. Senator, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Always a pleasure. We will be back with the health action from the Families USA Conference. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, broadcasting live from the Families USA Health Action Conference. And Wendell Potter is here with us. Wendell Potter is the former executive with one of the big Cigna, one of the big health insurance companies, turned whistleblower. He's the author of Deadly Spin. He has a new ebook out. It's called Obamacare, What's in It for Me? And Wendell, it's always great to have you on the program.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for being with us. So, what's your take on the biggest issues of the day with regard to health care?
You know, I think the biggest issues are that we've made some, I'll just be quite blunt, I think we've made some huge steps forward, particularly since the first of this year, in getting a lot of people covered. We've really made some enormous progress. I call it the end of the beginning of reform, though. There's so much more we've got to do. But we're going in the right direction, and we've seen that here in here in Washington, that efforts to roll it back have not worked. We'll continue to see efforts to try to thwart the progress and to make it a central political issue this year. But it's going to keep going forward. And I'm seeing a lot of effort, a lot of activity at the state level and the private sector, too. So we're on the right road.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you yesterday we talked on the TV show, and I asked Senator Sanders about this. He was on in the last hour. Vermont is going to a single-payer health care system,
right,
in 2016 or 2017 if they can. I mean, they've legislatively pulled it off. And you said that you felt that there was, or you knew or believed that there might be some efforts to blow that up. Can you give me any details on that or any?
Yeah, I spent quite a bit of time up there. In fact, I'll be back up there next month talking to some of the folks who have been leaders in the effort to get Vermont to a single-payer system. The insurance industry hasn't been showing its hands, but I know how they operate. They don't want any state to go single-payer, even small Vermont, small liberal Vermont, because if it works, then other states will pay attention. And they'll emulate Vermont. It could Massachusetts could be next, or Oregon, or California, which has twice passed legislation to enact a single payer system there. It happened to be during the Schwarzenegger years that he vetoed those bills.
Which raises another question, and pardon my interrupting you, but why hasn't that come back up in California? And then we get back to Vermont.
I'll tell you why. Because the industry has some friends in the Democratic Party, too. Even though there's a supermajority of Democrats in the California General Assembly, a lot of them are friendly to the Democrats.
I mean, so the industry didn't mind them passing it when they knew Schwarzenegger would veto
exactly.
it. But now that Jerry Brown is governor, they're not going to let them pass it.
That's exactly what's going on.
Wow.
That's exactly what's going on. The industry plays both sides of the street. They
sure.
have their pockets in, or their hands in, with money in the pockets of Democrats as well as Republicans.
So in Vermont, how do you think that they're going to succeed?
In Vermont, I think there's a good chance that they can. But there will be an intense campaign to confuse people. One of the things that has to be done in Vermont, and this will happen really in 2015 more than this year, there has to be a debate on how do you pay for it? How do you transition to a single-payer system
right.
that is financed with tax payments rather than premiums? And so the challenge is going to be for the advocates to explain to Vermonters how this will actually cost less. Their taxes will be higher, but the overall cost of the program will be less because they won't have to pay premiums, nor will individuals and businesses have to pay premiums to private insurance companies. A lot of waste can be taken out of the system, but that's not so easy to explain. That's going to be a challenge.
Can it be done by a monthly or an annual fee? I believe it's 200 and I'm sure you know these numbers. What I've heard from listeners is that in Mexico you can get a minimal national health care system access for about less than $300 a year, and that in Canada it's about $150 to $250 a month.
Yeah. Yeah, and the numbers will have to be communicated in that kind of way, so that it's perceived as being affordable and that it makes sense.
And that it's a fee rather than a tax.
And it's a fee rather than a tax, exactly. Yeah. But you can imagine that the industry will have all kinds of front groups in Vermont. It'll find every ally that it possibly can get to try to confuse people.
Right.
And they'll be using the tax word day in and day out.
Yeah. Your taxes are going to go up. Your taxes are going to go up. You taxed enough already.
Right. It'll be tax and it'll be a loss of choice. They'll say that doctors will leave the state and businesses will leave the state. We saw the same thing. The same thing happened in Saskatchewan, the first Canadian province that enacted a single-payer system. It's a similar playbook. We'll see it enacted, and I'm going to be there to be a part of the battle.
Yeah. Well, they were not successful in Saskatchewan. Was that because they didn't throw enough money at it, or was it because this is really an idea whose time has come? And how... You know, what lessons can Vermont learn from that?
Well, in Saskatchewan, it was a tribute to the forcefulness of the leader of the province, Tommy Douglas, who was a Baptist preacher, who was just he's often cited as the most revered figure in Canadian history, who was so very effective.
Kiefer Sutherland's grandfather.
His grandfather is exactly right. And so sometimes it's just to make there needs to be a figure who is so dedicated to this, who personifies that kind of change and is able to rally support and just stay focused on it. And is a charismatic person to just keep going forward. We'll see if Peter Shumlin is up to the task, or somebody else emerges as someone who can get it over the finish line.
Right. What are the other issues that you're looking at? I know you're looking at dental care seriously.
Dental care is very, very important. When I said the Affordable Care Act is the end of the beginning of reform, there are a lot of things it doesn't do adequate justice to, and dental care is one of them. It doesn't bring enough people into coverage for dental care. We have about 140, 150 million people who lack dental coverage. It's not a covered benefit under Medicare. The Medicaid program doesn't do a very good job because a lot of dentists don't take Medicaid patients, so we've got a big problem there. People don't realize, in many cases, the close connection between oral health and overall health.
You can get a heart attack from gum disease, can't you?
You sure can. You absolutely can. And you can develop diabetes, and abscesses in your gums can lead to brain infections. There have been stories of, right here in Washington, a young boy died not long ago.
Your mouth is part of your body.
It is.
Why isn't it covered? I don't get it.
And that is the weird thing. The mouth has been treated separately from the rest of our body for years because of the separation of professions, dentistry from the medical practice. That's something we've got to change.
That the dentists were never under the AMA.
That's right. They lobbied very hard to stay out of the Medicare program, too, and they're not a part of the AMA. They've spent enormous amounts of money to stay separate. They don't really like insurance. They prefer cash-paying patients. And, of course, the people who can do that are people who are, you know, fairly well-to-do.
Right. And so, therefore, basically, poor people don't have good access to
that's
dentistry.
Exactly right.
How do other countries deal with that? Do you know?
You know, a lot of countries have mid-level dental practitioners, sort of like nurse practitioners and physician assistants. In fact, two states in Alaska and Minnesota have begun allowing mid-levels to practice. The American Dental Association is opposed to it, but other states are looking at that. But at least 50 other countries are helping to solve the problem of access by allowing these mid-levels to practice, and they're making a big difference in preventive care.
Mm-hmm.
And doing some of the basic education work with people.
So they do stuff like teeth cleaning and you know, basically simple oral stuff. And
exactly.
And the complex stuff like tooth extractions or root canals and things takes a dentist.
It depends on the level of training, but absolutely, that's correct. And it also allows dentists to practice at the top of their license, and that's which is a good thing.
Yeah, remarkable. Where do we go from? We have just a half a minute. Where do we go from here? What do we do? What's the pressure point? What should people do?
Well, the pressure point is, I think, to pressure the states that haven't expanded the Medicaid program to do that. and to also just make sure that people are aware of the benefits that are available to them to sign up for coverage on the exchanges if they don't have insurance.
Right.
Just to keep educating people. That's why I wrote Obamacare, What's in It for Me, to make sure that people really understand what's in that law. And
there
what's
you
in
go.
Order.
Check out Wendell Potter's new book, Obamacare, What's in It for Me. It's a new ebook. So from all the usual suspects, I assume.
That's right.
Okay, great. Wendell Potter.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The website is Wendell Potter, just sound, spelled just like it sounds, .com.
That's right.
We'll be right back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's pick up some phone calls here. Robert in Jonesville, Louisiana. But his computer just doesn't. There we go. Robert, you're on the air.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Well, I mean, I just wanted to make one comment. That guy you was just talking to, that don't need to be called Obamacare, because Obamacare, that's what turns people off. It should be called the Affordable Care Act.
Right. Well, I've been calling.
I'm a white 57-year-old male, and I notice on watching TV on the news, that's what really turns people off. And then you say, do you like the Affordable Care Act? And then they say, yeah, I like the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
If you mention the word Obama, that turns them off.
Yeah. I by and large, you're absolutely right. And if the majority of people listening to this program were not probably already predisposed to be progressives or Democrats or liberals, I would be more circumspect about that. And if I was going on Fox News to debate it, I would call it the Affordable Care Act. But President Obama refers to it as Obamacare, so I think that's okay.
Yes,
but your point is well taken. Is that why you called?
Yes, sir.
I'm listening.
One thing I would like to say is I thank God for that Affordable Care Act, because I live in a red Republican state. I live in Louisiana.
Mm.
And our governor has not expanded the Medicaid thing for Medicaid for the state of Louisiana. And thank God I got it. I called the Affordable Care Act number and was going to purchase insurance. And they only had three insurance companies to choose from. And anyway, the three that I checked, the cheapest one I could get for me and my wife and two kids was $1,200-something a month, and that was through Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Whoa.
And I had to get the one that had the no deductible, because the rest of them had like a $10,000, a $15,000, $20,000 deductible, and I can't afford that. So anyway, the Affordable Care Act told me that I was eligible for Medicaid, which I hadn't worked in 5 months, and I had the money to pay for the insurance.
Right.
But anyway, so I said, all right. So I called, and sure enough, the woman done a three-way call with me to the Medicaid department. They turned me down. They done a three-way call from the Affordable Care Act to the Medicaid department in Louisiana, and they said, yes, sir, you're approved. So yeah. They sent me my thing. My wife has had a tumor on her left arm by her elbow for about 3 months, and I've been waiting to get insurance to bring her to the doctor. And so they took the tumor out. Thank God it was benign. Now she's got to get her teeth pulled to get dentures. Well, they don't pay for the dentures, which I'm not worried about it. I got to $1,300 to pull her teeth. But anyway, they're going to pay for her dentures.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they had to send a letter off to get it approved, which takes 4 or 5 weeks for them to approve it to get the letter back so she can get her dentures.
Wow.
So, anyway, but I think what they need to do is the Democrats need to run on the Affordable Care Act. They need to run hard on it. And then they need to start standing up for themselves. And I mean, every time you put it on Fox News, that's all they do is down the President of the United States and down the Obamacare and Benghazi. That's the two main things they target.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And George Bush had 11 embassy attacks and 60 people died while he was president. Nobody bothered to investigate those. But one embassy attack, 4 people died, and they're hysterical over in the Republican Party. Robert, thanks for the call. You are so spot on. You are absolutely right. Thank you. There's a pair of headphones right here. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jeff List is with us. He is a partner with Anzalone List Grove Research. Am I saying that right, Jeff?
It is a mouthful, but yes.
That would be amazing. The website ALGpolling.com. And you're a public opinion research firm. You specialize in meshes developing, and for 20 years you've worked with a whole bunch of different groups. How's the messaging? First of all, how's the polling going on Obamacare? And I know that if you call it the Affordable Care Act, you actually get a better response. So how's it going with the Affordable Care Act?
Well, it's not just that there's a difference between how Obamacare polls and how the Affordable Care Act polls. It's that there's also still a big difference between polling on the overall law and how the individual components poll. In other words, there are a lot more people who support protecting people with pre-existing conditions. There are a lot more people who support preventive care without a copay. There are a lot more people who support letting people stay on their parents' insurance up to age 26 than there are who support Obamacare as a whole. And that's something that's been true since the day it was passed. But I also think that the overall numbers on Obamacare can be a little bit misleading, because there are always going to be some people who say that they oppose the law because they wanted it to go further, who share the goals of Obamacare.
Yeah, I oppose the law because I want single-payer health care.
Right.
It's not that I oppose it. It's that it's not my first choice.
Right, right. Yeah. But some of those people will look in a poll like they are opponents of Obamacare. There will also be some people in a poll who look like they're opponents of Obamacare who want it to work, but maybe have concerns because of Republican attacks on the process through which it was passed or the website rollout. And those are not people who want to throw out Obamacare if there's no alternative being proposed. They're people who want to make it work better and who are rooting it for it to work.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the Republican alternative of health savings plans, that every month you set aside a few hundred dollars out of your paycheck, and when you've accumulated maybe $200,000 or $300,000, then you can afford to get cancer?
Right, right. I think that's really a fabulous plan for a lot of the people that Republicans are working for, and not such a fabulous plan for most of
Yeah, it's actually a good plan for billionaires. You're absolutely right. They get to tax shelter some of their money. But yeah, I mean this very seriously. Is there an alternative, Republican alternative to Obamacare? I know there's a Democratic alternative or a progressive alternative, which is single payer, what Vermont is talking about doing, you know, next year or the year after, 2 years from now. But all I've heard from Republicans is either lowest common denominator, do like they did with credit cards, and you know, let one state set really, really low insurance underwriting standards and have everybody be able to buy nationally from that state, and in which case everybody in the country gets screwed, or health savings plans. Is there anything else that the Republicans are offering?
No, that's basically it. And one of the problems that they've got is that every other idea that's been proposed by a Republican in the last 20 years ended up becoming part of
Obamacare. Yeah. I mean, Obamacare is what Richard Nixon proposed in 1972. It is what Mitt Romney put into place in Massachusetts.
And some of the revenue proposals were originally floated by McCain in 2008. So there really aren't any other Republican ideas that are sitting out there.
Fascinating. Messaging. What can we do better?
Well, I think that there's always a tendency on the Democratic side to say that the problem is our messaging. And I think that there have been a lot of cases in which Republican messaging was simpler to understand than Democratic messaging. If you go back to that first Tea Party summer in 2009, when people were just trying to figure out what the Affordable Care Act would mean for them, the Republican answer was, you get a dead grandmother and a government bureaucrat making your health care decisions. It was pretty easy to understand.
It's a bumper sticker.
Right, and the Democratic answer was, you get a public option, which could be a bumper sticker too, but nobody understood what that meant.
Everybody
knew what a dead grandmother was, and nobody knew what a public option was. Right. So I think there have been cases like that. But I also think it's true that to the extent that Obamacare has been defined negatively, that has more to do with the amount of money that's been spent by opponents and less to do with failures of Democratic messaging.
And you know, we were just talking with Wendell Potter, and he said, I used to live in Vermont, so I have some familiarity with the politics there. I don't know Peter Shumlin personally, but he was a state senator when we lived there, and then he ran for governor a couple of years ago on the platform of, I will sign a statewide single-payer health care bill. He won. The Democrats held the House and the Senate. They passed a single-payer bill. Senator, now Governor Shumlin has put together a committee that is working on all the logistics of it, because you got to basically create the bureaucratic infrastructure that resembles a health insurance company without the one guy who skims the money off the top to give bonuses to the executives and pay for the gold plated faucets in the executive washroom and the corporate jet. You know, you don't need him, but everything else. And Bernie's quite enthusiastic about this, Senator Sanders. But Wendell is like, you know, I know how these guys operate. The insurance company, they're going to pretty soon, you know, in the next year or so, they're going to start screaming, taxes are going to go up, taxes are going to go, and they might kill this thing. What do you think?
Well, if you look at what happened with Obamacare, just through 2010, it was over $500 million that had been spent either to undermine it through lobbying or just to advertise against it and brand it negatively. And that number has only increased since then.
Wow.
In a lot of states that have competitive elections, you've already seen, well, for example, in North Carolina, over $10 million spent advertising, almost all of it about Obamacare, almost all of it negative. And there are a lot of entrenched interests that
should the Democrats start jujitsu, take that energy and flip it around and start promoting the successes of Obamacare and have Democratic candidates running as champions of Obamacare?
Oh, well, I think that if Democrats don't, they're going to have a hard time in 2014. If you allow only one side to talk about Obamacare,
right,
it's going to be a problem. But I also think it's an opportunity because Obamacare fits really well into a bigger story about the middle class, or not even just the middle class, the working class,
right,
people who are more productive than they've ever been, but don't make any more than they did.
Well, they make actually less, $5,000 a year less than they made in the 1960s, you know, average working person. Brilliant. Jeff List, the website, ALGpolling.com. Do I have that right?
That's great. Okay. Thanks for having me.
And thanks
You're
for joining
listening
us.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Thank you. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Health Action, Families USA. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Health Action, the conference put on by Families USA. And Phil Billers is with us. He is the president and co-founder of Families USA. Hey, Phil. It's great to have you back with us.
A pleasure.
Let me just adjust your microphone. There we go. I think
that'll work. Okay, let's see if that's any better.
So tell me, first of all, the conference. What's going on here with the conference?
Well, we've got about 750 people from all around the country representing hundreds of organizations, all of whom care deeply about bringing quality, affordable health care to this country, something which I'm proud to say, since I'm from Massachusetts, we pioneered, and it's been a big success in Massachusetts, and now we're bringing this big success to the country as a whole, albeit with some teething pains, as in any major program, unfortunately, in this or any other country.
Have there been any particular speakers or programs or breakout sessions where you learned anything, or where there's a buzz that you'd like to share with our listeners or viewers?
Well, we kicked off the conference by a tremendously eloquent talk by our Vice President,
mm-hmm,
Vice President Biden, who spoke very emotionally about how it's made a difference in actual people's lives and gave us some very examples. And one young woman, for instance, with breast cancer, explained exactly how it's changed her life and how it's given peace of mind to millions of Americans. And then we had the governor of Kentucky, who single-handedly got the state of Kentucky to play an active, positive role in the program. With a lot of domestic opposition, he overcame it, and now Kentucky is showing exactly what can be done, just as Massachusetts did several years ago.
That's got to be putting Mitch McConnell in a bit of a bind, don't you think?
Too bad.
Perfect response. We're talking with Phil Billers. He's the president and co-founder of Families USA, which is put on this conference here at which I'm speaking, the Health Action Conference. And Phil is with us here on the Tom Hartman Program. Where do we go from here? I mean, this was essentially a Republican plan. This is the most conservative way to get widespread health coverage that one can imagine. And in fact, I think it's more conservative and more corporate than any of the developed nations of the world. Switzerland has a no government plan, but all the health providers have to be nonprofit. So it's a very different. You know.
I'm not sure I'd characterize it quite that way.
Okay, how would you characterize it?
We have had for generations a patchwork non-plan and non-system, and we've grafted onto that a system which is providing health care coverage to almost all Americans, and that's something we can build on. Now, it's true that as a result of a Supreme Court decision, almost half the states have chosen to do something which is thoroughly indecent, namely by not allowing to accept the federal money for Medicaid expansion. It literally means that in those states, if you're too poor to qualify for government aid, you get nothing. You're left out in the cold and no insurance, an absolute disgrace. I'm sure the people won't put up with it forever, but in the meantime, we have millions of people who should be getting protection and peace of mind who are not yet getting it. Fortunately, half the states have not taken that inhumane course, and I'm proud to be from Massachusetts, which was the model for the federal system and is now overwhelmingly popular among people who live in Massachusetts.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see, I know that in 2016, I believe in 2016, the Affordable Care Act allows individual states to opt out of the Affordable Care Act if they have an alternative plan which will cover virtually 100% of their residents. And Vermont has already taken the step of saying, we're going to do that. We're going to do it with a single-payer statewide system, which is what Saskatchewan did back in the 50s or 60s, and which led to the Canadian National Health Care Program. Do you see something, you know, when you look at your crystal ball, what do you see in the future?
Well, in this country, reform has always come slowly and gradually, and Vermont is going to take the next big step, it looks like, and I think that's very worthwhile, and we'll see how well it works and whether gradually the rest of the country can adopt it. We're a one-step-at-a-time country, and let's build on it.
Yeah. You were born in France.
Yes, I came to this country as a refugee when I was 5, and the United States has been very good to me. And in turn, I see providing quality, affordable health care as a goal and my part of it. It is my life goal. That's that of my wife, Kate.
Yeah, well, and France is often held up as having one of the very best health care systems, national health care systems in the world. Are you familiar with it enough to be able to describe it to our listeners and viewers?
Yes, the French system, as is common for almost every other area in France, is a much more centralized, top-down system. It's well-run. It provides good coverage for people at roughly half the cost we're paying for not covering all the people. So it's a more efficient system. But that's not surprising because we've been running the world's least efficient healthcare system of any country. That is, we've been paying more and not even covering everybody. And now we're moving away from that in the right direction, one step at a time.
There was a study was published yesterday, I believe, not apropos of healthcare, but of just privatization in general, that in 33 out of 35 cases where government functions were handed over to private corporations, with the theory being that private corporations in competition would make it cheaper, it actually became more expensive. It was not done as well. It took longer. There were more cost over, which just makes sense. I mean, if you're going to say somebody's got to make a buck off it, how do we change this prevalent thought virus in America that the so-called free market does things better than the so-called, you know, Uncle Sugar, big government, whatever, you know, pick your Republican euphemism?
Well, the free market, where there's real competition and a real market, sometimes can be remarkably efficient. When's the last time when you went to your doctor and he suggested something, you asked for 3 bids?
Right. So it's not really a marketplace.
It's not really a marketplace in any sense of the word. When you go to your doctor and he tells you what you should do and where you should do it, almost nobody does anything else but saying, okay.
Yeah, I mean, people compare airfares online. They compare hotel prices online. They go to an electronic shop and they compare five different computers. You don't, when your doctor says your gallbladder needs to come out, you don't say, well, I think I'll talk to four more doctors first.
In addition to which, even if you wanted to, there's no practical way for you finding out the various prices for the various ways of treating you. So you just take your doctor's word for it. Not necessarily a bad thing, but then the idea of the free market in healthcare has only meaning in some imaginary world that doesn't exist.
Right. Plus, if somebody was having an acute gallbladder attack, it might take 6 months to get all those appointments made even. I mean, when I first moved to Washington, D.C., I just wanted to, you know, get a doctor, have a physical, and start a relationship with a doctor. Nobody who took our insurance, which is one of the big insurance companies, there wasn't a single doctor in the district that would see me within 6 months.
Wow.
I mean, it was just incredible. It was just, you know, it's just amazing. Concierge medicine is this huge thing now in D.C. where you pay a couple $1,000 a year and you see a doctor who basically doesn't take insurance. It's amazing. So where do we go from here?
Well, several important directions. First, we've got to end this disgrace of those states in which if you're too poor to get government help, you won't get any insurance and no government help. That's a scandal.
Apropos of that, if I may, what's really going on here is people in Texas, for example, one of those states that you're describing, people in Texas are paying taxes to the federal government, and the federal government is saying, you know, Texas, we'll give you back $60 billion of your own tax money.
And the state government says, no thanks, we don't want it.
That's right. And why are the Democrats not messaging it that way? Why are the, you know, knowing how Americans feel about taxes, in large part because of, you know, decades of Republican messaging, why are the Democrats not saying, Rick Perry won't let you have your own tax money, Rick Scott won't let you have your own tax money? It seems like that would just blow up this Republican obstructionist strategy.
Well, the sad truth is that is being done. There are websites, for instance, I think one of them is called Texas Won't Let Me Have Healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
But if you spend many millions of dollars to drown that message out, it works for a time.
Yeah. So this has become such a large and profitable industry over the last century that dislodging it, removing it, is going to be sort of like trying to take down a stage 4 cancer in a person.
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I think we're going to do it in time. But that's
stage 1.
That's where the informed and involved citizenry in the long run makes the real difference. In the short run, the power of money wins.
Yeah, to paraphrase Jefferson, that's brilliant. Phil Villers, the president and co-founder of Families USA. You're doing God's work, Phil. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks. This is what we need, and I'm glad to do my part.
We're very pleased to have you on the program, and very pleased to be here as part of this. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Be sure to check it out, familiesusa.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Chris in Humphrey, Arkansas. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
My anxiety issues. My anxiety issues are not about talking on your show or talking to you. My anxiety issues are about April 13th, 2011, the Tea Party, the Koch brothers, and Rick Crawford, Arkansas District 1, my congressman. Those are my anxiety issues. And I'll tell you how they relate to each other. On April 13th, 2011, I called for an SBIR grant. And then the next day was the Tea Party shutdown. Oh, yeah, I'm also afraid of the NSA. The NSA would have records that all of this occurred. Do you believe that, sir?
I do, but the NSA's mandate is international threats to the country, not domestic law enforcement. That's the FBI.
Well, the FBI would have access to NSA records, being that those records exist.
Arguably, yeah. I mean, there's supposed to be a firewall between the agencies, but so theoretically, it would require the intervention of some court, some judicial agency, I believe. I could be wrong. Actually, they're both executive branch agencies, but I know that there's legislation that's supposed to separate these agencies from each other that came out of the Nixon abuses, where he was using spying agencies like the CIA and domestic law enforcement agencies like the FBI to spy on people like Martin Luther King and to develop enemies lists and using the IRS to punish people and stuff like that. All of that has now been rendered illegal. So is your point that we should be using the NSA as a law enforcement agency?
No, my point is that the Tea Party shut down the country just to stop my invention. That's my point. And NSA records would prove that was the case, because I called my congressman's constituent services office, Rick Crawford, Arkansas District 1.
Right.
And then he called his teabag buddies and the Koch brothers, and then they shut down the government for the last 3 years.
Well, the government actually was only shut down for like a week or 2 weeks. It's still running.
Since April 14th, 2011, a lot of things, the Tea Party shutdown has caused a lot of pain for this country, has it not?
I agree with you, but I'm wondering why you can't get your invention patented or whatever it is you're trying to do now.
Okay, the date in question is the day that I received a provisional patent from the patent office.
Right.
Okay, and then I promptly said, hey, I've got my SBIR grant. Whoa! So I tried to pursue that, and then the next day was the Tea Party shutdown on the 14th.
Right.
And ever since then, my attempt, all other major attempts that I have tried to build this thing have failed. I tried to go on Kickstarter. Somebody hacked that account, and I'm not going back because I know that I would just be banging my head against the wall. They would find another way to stop me. Okay, I went to that outfit. Oh, dang it. I left my notes in the other room. Green Tech Open. I went there. That was a failure. GoDaddy.com. That was a failure. Americans with Disabilities, the Veterans Services.
It sounds, Chris, like you've got a real challenge here, and I'm not sure how to counsel you other than to persist. Now I hear music loudly. Now I hear music loudly. Before I was hearing absolutely nothing. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see here. Thomas in Flint, Michigan. Hey, Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I was originally on hold to talk to Bernie Sanders, but that was interesting, that last caller.
Yeah, well, I think, sorry, you know, who knows? Who knows? Sometimes, you know, reality is stranger than truth, and sometimes, you know, people just don't understand what's going on. I don't know.
But, yeah, and I heard your voice on trying to help, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's, yeah, stranger than truth. Speaking of, Ron Thomas, the father of Kelly Thomas, was on MSNBC earlier, before you and Senator Sanders started talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for my call is a little bit more frustration with politicians, and I wanted to ask Senator Sanders this, but I'm glad I get to ask you this. Why is it, do you think, that the goes to messaging, some politicians seem to think Anonymous and groups Occupy Wall Street are classified as terrorists.
Domestic terrorists,
and
yeah.
To me that, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't make any sense to me either. I mean, any more than classifying the Tea Party as domestic terrorists. There is a fringe within the Tea Party who get together and practice their machine gun drills and, you know, the preppers, the so-called preppers, who are preparing for the end of the world and for the ultimate last battle with our government. And I think that some of those folks probably because they're talking about armed resistance to our government, fall into the category of domestic terrorism. And there may be some people associated with the Occupy movement or with the anonymous group that fall into that category too. But if so, they are very much the exception and not the rule. They're the outliers. And I know from personal experience, both from back in the 60s when I was in SDS, and we would find folks like that, people who are, yelling, hey, let's go burn down buildings. We worked to get those people out, number one. And some of them did get out, and they started the Weather Underground. We also found years later when the Michigan State Police declassified their records that at least one of those guys was actually a state police officer who was, saying, let's go burn buildings down. There's always going to be there's enough mentally ill people in the country that any group is going to have one or two of them in it. And so you just, but to say, excuse me, to say that, Occupy or Anonymous are terrorist groups is I think they're patriots. I mean, that's insane in my opinion.
But that's exactly it. And send those who are the non-fringe of the Tea Party, quite frankly, the ones you described with the end of the world doomsday ones scare the hell out of me.
Yeah.
But
the average Tea Partier is a well-intentioned Republican who really, has a somewhat lopsided worldview because they've been watching Fox News.
Exactly that. But thank you for answering my question, because I knew either you or Bernie would be able to set me straight on that, because I watched the Fullerton City Hall stream on live stream, and somebody had said that about them, and I was just like, really?
I'd be astonished.
And the cops who killed them killed Kelly Thomas weren't terrorists. It really struck a chord, and I just couldn't. So I had to ask.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call, Thomas. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Merlene in Morriston, Florida. Hey, Merlene, what's up?
Dr. Hartman, I presume.
Ms. Merlene,
I mentor. I listen to you pretty much every day,
and
I have your book.
Thank you.
I want you to know I have your book.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yeah, thank you very much. The Crash of 2016, you mean?
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
Well, thank you.
The thought just came to me. The American people don't really have anyone representing them on most all the subjects that we're interested in,
mm-hmm.
things that need to be done, And what I was thinking, maybe what we need to do is create a union, a citizens' union.
Well, that's what the United States is supposed to be.
I know, but we're not.
In fact, they use the word union in the Constitution.
It's not working.
It's
not working for the people.
Yeah, yeah, it's
we
true.
We need a citizens' union, which we could include all these clauses that we need to address that needs to be done.
Well, the reason why that citizens' union, that what Abraham Lincoln referred to, and it wasn't just the union as in the North, it was the union of the nation, and it's in, I believe the word is used in the Constitution as well. The reason it's not working right now goes back 38 years from next week it goes back a lot farther than that, but in a big way in the recent history, it goes back 38 years from next week to the Buckley versus Vallejo decision. When the Supreme Court said that money is protected by the First Amendment, money in being spent in political advertising and so-called political speech. And that was an abomination, in my opinion. And that was the beginning of the end not necessarily the end, but it was the beginning of the really serious erosion of small d democracy and a small r republic. And if we want to get back to the small R Republican values on which this country was founded, the small D Democratic values on which this country was founded, we need to repudiate the Supreme Court's assertion 38 years ago that money is protected by the First Amendment. The First Amendment does not say, billionaires have more speech than the average person or the right to more speech. It does not say that. And that's why I think movetoamend.org and you know, there's a lot of other groups that are doing it too, but I think Move to Amend is doing it the best. It's so important, and it's so important to just get over there and sign up and start participating. Merlene, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We will be back. We're broadcasting live from the Health Action Conference put on by Families USA. And in our third hour, we're going to start off the hour, assuming that she shows up, with Christina Postolowski.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and broadcasting from the Families USA Health Action Conference here in Washington, D.C. And Christina Postolowski is with me. And if you can get just a little bit closer so I get you on the camera here. We're on Free Speech TV as well. There we go.
You got me?
Yes.
Great.
Okay. You are the Senior Policy Analyst with Young Invincibles, the website youninvincibles.org.
That is correct.
Are you invincible?
No,
You're
we are not,
young.
Believe it or not. Even though that's the stereotype about our generation, we actually need health care and need coverage.
So you've created an organization to and targeted toward and by millennials?
Yep. We represent young adults ages 18 to 35 on the economic issues that affect our generation. So that's healthcare, higher education, and jobs and employment.
That is great. That is great. That's, you know, and those are the big issues of our day, I think, you know, not just for millennials, but, you know, right across the board. But those are really, really big issues. So with regard to healthcare, what are you up to?
So we have been working on our Healthy Young America campaign for about a year now. We've been traveling across the country, talking to young people as well as other organizations that work with young adults, telling them what's in the Affordable Care Act, what their health care options are, and for those groups that work with young people, how they can do outreach.
And how can they do outreach?
A lot of it depends on the particular young people you're meeting with and where you are. So, you know, for community colleges, for example, we've encouraged them to have as part of their orientation program something on healthcare and the new options for healthcare coverage. A lot of community colleges don't offer a student health plan, so and students may be a little bit older, so they might not be in a parent's plan. So there's a high need for these new affordable options on those campuses, for example.
Right. And what... Yeah, the Koch brothers are spending apparently millions of dollars on these ads, these creepy Uncle Sam, you know, with a speculum and with a condom or whatever, or you know, or the,
yep.
You know, the glove. And
there's a speculum in one of them.
Yeah. The one directed toward women, and the glove is the prostate exam, I guess, toward the guy. Are those having any impact? Are you getting any feedback? I mean, what is the perspective of millennials on about the ACA by and large right now?
Well, I think the truth is that young people do want coverage. Only about 5% of young adults don't want healthcare coverage. The rest don't have it, who are uninsured, don't have it because they haven't been able to afford it, and they don't get an offer of coverage through their employer that's affordable.
Right.
So I think you know, we'll see as open enrollment continues, you know, whether the ads have any effect, whether the scare tactics have any effect. We're really focused on getting information out to people about what's in the law and then letting them make an informed choice.
Yeah. And how do you do that?
So, you know, one of our key messages is about financial security, that this is not only about taking care of your health, it's also taking care of your pocketbook. You know, you never know when you're going to get sick, when you're going to get injured, and you can be in debt for thousands of dollars if something does happen.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Depending on what it is. But
so, you know, it's an investment in your future, getting health insurances.
Yeah. Yeah, is it? It seems that, given the ravages of 32 years of Reaganomics now, you know, before Reagan came into office, 80% of college tuition was paid for by state, federal, or colleges. Now it's only 20%. So the effect of this is that tuition has quadrupled or quintupled or whatever it is. Before Reagan came into office, we had a protectionist trade policy. We still had manufacturing in the United States. The job market was tight. Pay was good. Now we no longer have manufacturing. You know, I could go through a long, long list. You know, we've gone from being the biggest creditor country in the world to the biggest debtor country in the world, and in large part, that's, you know, we have the most consumer debt in the world. We've got almost $1 trillion in credit card debt. We have more than $1 trillion in student debt.
Yep.
This is insane. This is absolutely insane. Is there a consensus growing among millennials that the old order doesn't work? And if so, do they get it that the old order is only 32 years old?
I mean, I think that there's certainly growing concern among our generation for these issues that you've talked about. You know, we've had double-digit unemployment for the last 6 years for young people. We have over $1 trillion in student loan debt. And one of the big reasons for that is the state divestment in higher education. And, you know, Young Invincibles, for example, is starting to work with students and student governments who want to get involved in this issue, in going and talking to their state legislatures about restoring some of that funding.
Speaking as an old fart here, I'm, you know, from the boomer generation, and when I was going to college in the late 60s and early 70s, you could literally work your way through school, work in a minimum wage job just in the summers, and pay for all of your tuition at a state university. I went to Michigan State University in Lansing Community College. And I worked in a gas station pumping gas. I worked at a radio station as a weekend DJ. My wife put herself through college working as a waitress in a Howard Johnson's. We had no student debt. I mean, I didn't know, the only person I knew throughout my entire teenage and early 20s who had student debt was a friend who was getting a PhD in math. I mean, it was for graduate school. People would get debt for graduate school or to become a doctor. Do you think most millennials know that that's how radical a change that we have seen, that Abe Lincoln established land-grant colleges in the 1860s as free universities, and they were free universities for almost 100 years before Reagan came along, that Thomas Jefferson created the University of Virginia as the first free college in the United States, and he saw a day when every college would be free, that we would invest in the intellectual infrastructure of our kids, and that, you know, 32 years of Reaganomics has just ripped this apart? Or do people just think this is how it's always been?
I think, unfortunately, there is a certain amount of acceptance of what the current state is, the state of play is. You know, the average student loan debt is something like $27,000 right now. And young people know the importance of education and want to go to school and know that's important for their financial futures. And I think a lot of them feel kind of stuck, not knowing, you know, what other options there are for them other than taking out this tremendous debt.
Yeah, they need to be talking to their grandparents and their parents. When I was a kid, back in my day, you know, but I think that there is a lesson here. We're talking with Christina Postolowski, who is with the, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Close enough. Younginvincibles.org is the website, working to wake up the millennial generation on healthcare and other issues as well, student loans and jobs. We've covered healthcare, I think, fairly well. I'm curious, in the minute or so we have left, what your thoughts are on the best way to address the jobs situation. We have not only massive unemployment, but now minimum wage workers, this study just came out yesterday or the day before from the Economic Policy Institute, minimum wage workers are 3 to 4 times, you know, the percentage of education that they have is like, you know, hundreds of percent greater than it was in the 60s for the same kind of job. There was about a decade ago, I think it was Marriott was running ads bragging about the fact that their bellboys on average had a bachelor's degree. Right? I see that as a sign of a failing society, not a successful company. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is certainly some truth to the situation that we're in, that we've got people who may be overeducated and underemployed. I think there are a lot of people who are not able to make ends meet in the jobs that they have, especially at the current minimum wage, and that's a big challenge. You know, funding for job training programs has been cut in recent years as well for folks wanting to go into those manufacturing jobs or other jobs that need technical skills. And it's a real shame that, you know, these are people who are working and are still poor.
Yeah, and this is just wrong. I mean, this is just absolutely wrong. Am I hearing music in the background or not? I'm not. Okay. There it is. I knew it was coming any second. Christina,
yeah.
Postolowski, thanks so much for being with us. And younginvincibles.org, once again, the website. And get over there, check it out. And in particular, if you know anybody who's under 35, get them over there and check it out, right?
Yep. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Christina. Great to meet you. Thank you for being here. Very nice to meet you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That's younginvincibles.org. We'll be back with your calls right after this. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ray in Noblesville, Indiana. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I've called because I have concerns regarding the NSA security business and also tax cheats.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I know a way to find some new tax revenue to help our economy.
Okay.
Large corporations like GE and multimillionaires and billionaires like Koch Brothers, Waltons, Mitt Romney, etc., they pay little or no income taxes, and I think they need to step up and pay their due share of the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
We know the NSA's collection of metadata, so I think the FBI should subpoena NSA records of all phone calls and Internet transactions to and from the United States to places like the Cayman Islands and Switzerland, and then they should investigate these tax cheats and hold them accountable.
But you realize the net effect of that would be to ratify the NSA's mass data collection efforts, which have been, you know, judged by now a government agency to be unconstitutional. It would just encourage them to do more of it. Is that a good thing?
Well, no, that's not a good thing, but I just was trying to think of a way to hold these shysters accountable for what they've done to the economy.
Well, I think that's what you have federal prosecutors and grand juries and investigative reporters for. You know, tragically, they tend not to go after rich people and wealthy people. The billionaires tend to always get a pass. The banksters, I mean, look at Jamie Dimon here, you know, going on TV over the weekend, you know, sobbing about how, you know, his bank's paying $13 billion for criminal activity, you know, rather than being shut down. $13 billion is like, you know, nothing. And it was, half of it was tax deductible. It's nuts. So, but, you know, excuse me, Ray, I'm with you. I think this is it's a serious issue that we need to deal with. I would not personally use the NSA to do it because I don't want to give them any more money or credibility for something that we have not yet as a nation determined is actually legal. But anyhow, I agree with your goal. Don in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hey, Don, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Hey, thank you, Tom. First of all, I just wanted to say I wish that caller from Louisiana well that you had over an hour ago talking about his family. My mom's had similar medical problems, and I am thankful for the ACA. Anyway, my call today is about a call you got yesterday from somebody trying to defend. Well, they were pro-gun anyway.
Right.
And,
it's probably an NRA plant.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about Australia's, the numbers, the decrease in murders and suicides. And, oftentimes I hear a lot of conservatives talk about, well, after that, then you have an increase in assaults, or a particular one they talk about is home invasions.
Right.
And actually, first of all, I think that's abhorrent to reduce a gun death to the level, you know, a crime that's less,
right,
results in something that's less than death. That to me, that's abhorrent. These people have lost.
But secondly, we're running out of time here, Don. You had a bigger point you wanted to make?
Oh,
real quick.
No, just these statistics are wrong. Crime overall has not increased. You can go to the Australia Institute of Criminology.
Okay, great. So he was basically just throwing BS at me. Thank you, Don. I appreciate that. Thank you. It smelled fishy. Boy, I'm really mangling my metaphors here. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you, and Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey, thank you for watching the program. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Well, with the extended drought here in California, Governor Brown has declared a drought emergency,
mm-hmm,
and I thought of a way to promote solar energy, which will save a lot of our precious water supply, and it's called a solar water credit. And it turns out that the utilities using coal, oil, natural gas, nuclear are second only to agriculture in their daily use of America's freshwater resources.
Right.
But the good news is that once manufactured, solar panels use virtually no water in the generation of clean, renewable electricity. So people who put solar panels on the rooftop would receive a solar water credit for saving a lot of water over the 20 to 40 year life cycle of a solar panel. So I say, let's get star powered. Let's get solar if we want to save our precious water resource.
That is so brilliant, Harvey. I knew both of the pieces of that equation. I knew the two and the two, but I never did the 2 + 2 = 4. You're absolutely right. Nuclear power plants have to be continuously cooled by fresh water, which is why they always sit them next to rivers or sometimes the ocean. If they're going to use salt water, they have to. You know, it's a little more complicated, but still they do that. And even coal-fired power plants or oil-fired power plants or natural gas-fired power plants have to have cooling systems, and typically those are water cooling systems. I think almost universally they're water cooling systems, and so they site them near fresh water. And it not only is problematic for the rivers, because now you're heating up the water, you're changing the ecosystem, but in some cases it's making, you know, the water not even all that it's damaging the water. It's damaging the river water systems. And, you know, not to mention the mind-boggling amounts of water that are used for fracking, for coming up with natural gas. So,
right.
I'm absolutely with you. Harvey, thank you very much. That's a brilliant suggestion. It's an absolutely brilliant suggestion. Good on you. Hang on just a second, Pat. Michael in Clayton, North Carolina. Hey, Michael, what's on? Wait a minute, it's 22 minutes past the hour? Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm going to get back to Pat in just a second. Michael, quick question in Clayton, North Carolina? No, Michael. Okay. Pat in Beloit, Wisconsin. Pat, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I have one statement and a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Last week with net neutrality, you talked about it possibly being declared a utility.
Yes.
Okay, if you have to do that, I live out in the country. We still have dial-up. Would that force them, like the rural electrification project was, to bring it out to me?
Maybe, maybe not. The REA, which was in the 1930s, wasn't it, under Roosevelt?
Yeah, my utility just celebrated its 75th anniversary.
Right.
So
there you go. So that was the Rural Electrification or Rural Electrification Administration or Electric Administration. And the idea was, let's take electricity out to the rural areas, because the power companies, the for-profit power companies said, hey, you know, it's where you got high population density, we can make a buck, but we can't make a buck running these long lines. And so the government said, okay, well, we'll run the long lines. And then either you've got private companies pumping into them or you develop local public utilities. That was followed in the 1950s, I believe, and I could be wrong on my timeline, but I believe that this was during the Eisenhower administration, with the Rural Telephony Administration, the RTA, which helped the phone companies run phone wires out to people in rural areas. These were both acts of Congress, Pat. They weren't the result of the executive branch saying, this is a utility, therefore people have a right to it, therefore we're going to have to do it. They didn't, you know, the presidents didn't have the authority. There was money involved. It had to be appropriated. The Constitution says only Congress can do that. And it wasn't a result of the courts saying our reading of the Constitution says that everybody has to have electricity, because the commons are treated in the Constitution, but only in a very, very light way. So I think the answer would be no, it wouldn't immediately follow. But you could make a strong legislative case or even an executive branch case that it should. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because, you know, there's a great deal of the country that is rural.
Yeah.
And we're all still dial-up. And
I know.
Unfortunately, that stifles entrepreneurship and many, many different things. I mean, I could do it through a satellite, but it's very expensive to do that way.
Well, and even then, it's you still don't have the upload speeds. You only have the download speeds.
Because, exactly. Yeah. And I live in a woods, so guess what my signal would be like?
Yeah. Yeah, and
trees moved.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. One of my brothers lives in a very rural area, and he's still dealing with DSL. You know, that's the fastest he can get.
Yeah, it's really sad.
And he had to raise hell to get DSL.
Real quickly, Tom, I just had angioplasty last summer because having had cancer 25 years ago, an artery in my leg from the radiation was clogged.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing: how would I have ever saved $50,000 to have covered that?
Wow. Well, according to the Republicans in Congress, if you set aside $5,000 a year for 10 years, you'd have it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a teaching assistant.
Don't you have an extra $5,000 every year left over, like the Republicans in Congress do?
A teaching assistant doesn't make a lot of money.
Yeah, well, see, somebody needs to tell the Republicans in Congress that not everybody makes, you know, $180,000 to $200,000 a year paycheck, plus, you know, gets all their, you know, has a free dining room and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Pat, excellent call. Thank you very much. Great to hear from you. Robert in Gray Court, South Carolina. Robert, we have 1 minute until the
I have two questions I'd like for you to ask some of your right-wing callers.
Mm-hmm.
One, if we the people can't govern ourselves, who can?
Well, their answer is is one of two things. Either they will say the free market will govern us. This was Milton Friedman, Chicago School of Economics, his idea that the invisible hand of the free market will provide all public good if you have a free market, which is really just a fancy way of saying whoever controls the market will govern us, which means the billionaires and the big transnational corporations. So I think that that's the answer that they would give you. Or they would say, you know, let's do a, you know, the you know, who has God blessed strategy? And, the rich people, they must be the ones that God blessed, because they're the good people among us. And then you've got, I'm forgetting that religion now, but then you've got this this one particular religious perspective that, you know, the blessed few are the ones who will govern us. Robert, thank you for the call. But I've had that debate with those conservatives, and they won't say it that way, but when you boil it down, that's what it gets to.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We're broadcasting live from the Health Action Conference. We'll have Judy Waxman with us when we come back from the break, and more of your calls. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Health Action, Radio Row put together, or the conference put together, we're in the Radio Row, put together by FamiliesUSA.org. And sitting here with me is Judy Waxman, the Vice President for Health and Reproductive Rights of the National Women's Law Center, NWLC.org is the website, as in National Women's Law Center. Surprise. Judy, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So what is the state of affairs with regard to women's reproductive rights and women's health in the United States?
Well, there's a lot going on, as you might guess. On the health side, of course, reproductive health is part of health, but I want to talk for a minute about the Affordable Care Act,
sure,
quote, Obamacare, and mention that we released a report just yesterday called Mind the Gap. And what that is about is that in half the states so far, there is eligibility to get Medicaid at very, very low levels for women and men, sometimes the eligibility level is zero, and yet people that don't make such a little amount of money may make enough money that they can't get that program, but they also don't make enough to be able to get into the new health insurance marketplace.
Are you talking about the John Roberts donut hole states?
I am talking about that. Okay. So in the original law, every state was supposed to build on Medicaid, cover Medicaid for everybody who was up to the poverty level. And then on top of that, people who had some money will get subsidies to get private insurance.
Right.
But what happened was the Supreme Court said, well, it's really an option to the state if they want to cover everybody under poverty and Medicaid. Half the states have taken the money, and it's a lot of money. Right now, it's 100% coverage for these people.
Right. This is like $60 billion for Texas alone.
Oh, it's huge.
Sort of
yeah. Eventually, it goes to 90%. But at any rate, half the states have not yet decided to take the money. So that's the gap. And what we found is women in the gap are obviously there's nothing to help them, and men
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
But we looked at women in this report.
Right.
We compared women that of a low income that had insurance with those that didn't have insurance in these 25 states. And, of course, what we found was women without insurance were 2.5 times more likely to go without the health care they need because they didn't have the money.
Sure, because nobody wants to go bankrupt from medical bills, which is what happens, or
right.
you know, they have to pay the rent. And,
might say that's, of course, that would be the outcome, but the truth is opponents of this say, well, nobody goes without health care in this country, but it just
no,
isn't.
No, that's nonsense. And nobody goes without emergency health care in this
right.
country, and that was passed during the Reagan administration.
Insurance matters,
yeah,
and that's what this
is
about.
It matters big time. This seems to me like an incredible messaging opportunity for not just Democrats, but people right across the women in the state of Texas, for example,
mm-hmm.
to say, you know, we or someone in our family is paying taxes. We or our family, we're paying taxes to the federal government.
Absolutely.
That money's going off to Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is saying to Rick Perry, I'll give you back $60 billion. I'll give you our taxpayers back. It's not going to sit in Rick Perry's pocket. It's going to go right to those women in Texas and the men and their families as well. We'll give you back that $60 billion that you sent to Washington, D.C. And Rick Perry is saying, keep your money. We'd rather just, keep sending it to you and never get it back. It seems like that kind of argument, if it was made well and it was made loudly and it was repeated enough, would cause the heads of Republicans all across the state of Texas to explode.
It's so true. But let me even add a little, another element to it, and that is the money doesn't really go to the individual people. It goes to the hospitals.
Right.
It goes to those hospitals that are struggling, that are saying, we can't keep giving emergency care to people without insurance. It's going to the health provider, the clinics, the pharmacies. It's going to enrich the economic basis of the state and also get good health care for people.
Well, and it's also filling in the holes, isn't it, caused by people? I mean, in the 80s during the Reagan administration, there was a law passed that said that if you show up at an emergency room, and
right.
they have to see you. You
right.
can't say no. And
they can charge you.
But if you can't pay,
yeah.
they're out of luck. And so Medicaid fills in a lot of those holes. It keeps these organizations solvent. It keeps them functioning. I mean, we're hearing stories now. Tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I understand that there are actually health clinics around the United States and hospitals around the United States that may be closing up,
yes.
radically scaling back services, or even going out of business altogether simply because the governor of the state has said, no, we don't want to take that Medicaid money from Washington, D.C. because there's a Democrat in the White House.
That's absolutely true. Another thing in the law is that currently, these hospitals get some extra money if they serve a lot of uninsured people. Well, that fund is phased out in the law because the presumption was everybody's going to have coverage. So you don't need to give hospitals extra money to just stay afloat. So the hospitals are getting hit from both sides. They're seeing more people without insurance, and they're going to get less help from other funds, and the governor won't take the money so that they can stay afloat and have paying patients.
Wow. Now, meanwhile, if we can shift to reproductive health.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, we've got this very, very aggressive anti-abortion movement in the United States that grew out of the Roe v. Wade decision. And there's a whole argument that could be had around that that Ruth Bader Ginsburg engaged recently about, you know, this really should have gone through the legislature. We should have had a national conversation. The women's movement got stunted because, you know, the issue was taken away, whatever. You know, that it's really a debate about judicial supremacy in the United States, which
we
is...
We can do that for a few hours.
Yes. Yeah. I'm writing a book right now about 1803 and Jefferson's reaction to, you know, don't even get me started about, you know, about Marbury versus Madison. But there's a larger reality here, and that is that this, what started out as an anti-abortion movement or a pro-life movement, as they called themselves, although that name prior to 73 was owned 100% lock, stock, and barrel by the anti-death penalty movement. But in any case, the pro-life movement, that it is rapidly morphing into kind of a Mike Huckabee anti-birth control movement and an anti-sex education in our schools movement, and ultimately an anti-healthcare for women if it has anything to do with their reproductive organs. It's, you know, it's like we've, in this weird way in this country, we've taken the teeth out of healthcare. In other words, your mouth is not covered by Obamacare, even though it's part of your body. And now they want to take women's reproductive organs out of healthcare.
Yes.
What's going on here?
I think it is, as you say, a strong movement, but it really is an ideological situation which is not growing across the country. Mm-hmm. It is, we are seeing time and time again in certain states where they are passing more and more laws to restrict
abortion. Well, that's what I meant by
abortion.
Growing.
Right.
It's exploding.
It's exploding in those areas that are anti-choice and anti-women. My point is just that the other half of the states are not doing those things. They are fighting back. They are resisting. They are even promoting proactive things. What we're concerned about, another thing we're concerned about, of course, on the birth control front is that in March, a case will be before the court. There will be arguments. You may have heard of it. One of the companies is Hobby Lobby, mm-hmm. which is a chain of craft stores. Another case that goes with this is called Conestoga Wood. They make furniture. And both of those owners of the companies have said, well, it's against my religion, me, individual, to cover some kinds of birth control, so I do not want that plan to go in my employees' I do not want that coverage in my employees' plans. So in other words, the boss is imposing his religion on all the employees. And we know that 99% of women, and the men are complicit in that, of course, are using birth control in this country. I mean, it's not a question anymore about use. Virtually everybody uses it at some time in their lives. And yet these bosses are saying, not going to be covered in my health plan.
Right.
Now, is that going to be allowed?
Right. And because the bosses run basically a kingdom. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the Supreme Court rules on this, because
it will be.
I mean, Roe v. Wade was actually, as Ruth Bader Ginsburg pointed out last week, Roe v. Wade was not decided on the right of women to have an abortion.
It was decided
on the right of a male physician. In fact, they used male pronouns in the ruling to perform an abortion. And so it's going to be very, very interesting. What can people do? Judy, we have a little less than a minute left. We're talking to Judy Waxman.
Well, I'd love for people to look at our website, which is nwlc.org.
As in Women's National Women's Law Center.
Exactly. And we have another one. This is personal. .org, and both of those are have a lot of social media involved. There's a lot of reports one can read to get educated, and lots of actions listed on what people can do.
That's great. What's the single best first starting action in the last 10 seconds here?
Call your state and federal legislators and tell them what you think.
There you go. Judy Waxman, the Vice President for Health and Reproductive Rights with the National Women's Law Center, nwlc.org. Check it out. Twitter at NWLC. Judy, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be it.
It's an honor and pleasure to talk with you. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be right back with your calls right after this. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dominic in Severn, North Dakota, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. Hey, Dominic, what's on your mind today?
Oh, that's Severn, Maryland.
Oh, Maryland. I'm sorry. You're right. It is. That's what happens when you grab things out of the corner of your glasses.
About the earthquake we had in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And you said at least twice that D.C. was caused, that earthquake was caused by fracking, and that's not at all true. That is the Central Virginia Seismic Zone. It's been active for very many years.
Mm-hmm.
There's been from 1774 till 1828, there was about 10 damaging earthquakes in Virginia that were felt in Washington, and mm-hmm. and about half of those did damage in Washington and Baltimore.
Hmm.
So there's nothing unique about
that. Yeah, somebody called yesterday and said that there was, it had to do with water, not fracking. That it had to do with, you know, that there was water activity underground, and that was somehow. You're saying it's tectonic.
That's what's called an interplate quake. There's mm-hmm. no, it's in the center of the quake. Of the plate, there's no motion due to tectonics
right.
associated with any of these, and it's really a mystery why they occur.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere east of the Rockies, all the quakes are a big mystery as to why they happen.
Right, except in Ohio, where they demonstrated that fracking was causing quakes.
It's been known for many years that you can cause earthquakes by injecting water.
Yeah.
And that's nothing new. That was well understood.
But you're quite certain that was not the case here in D.C.
Oh no! There's no way. I've been watching quakes in this area in the east for over 20 years, and that's been a hot spot from way back.
Why is it that D.C. has no history of earthquakes?
Oh, it has earthquakes.
We do.
We
do. Okay.
Oh yeah.
All the coverage I was catching at the time of the earthquake happened was, "Whoa, this is unprecedented. This has never happened."
But
apparently people were wrong.
There haven't been many quakes since 1928.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lull in activity.
I see.
But before that, there were 10 earthquakes that were felt in Washington that were damaging in some places, and about half of them were damaging in D.C.
Yeah.
President Adams even wrote about one of them.
Oh, that's interesting. So are you a seismologist, Dominic, or is this a hobby, or just your knowledge?
I'm an amateur geologist. I'm also a mechanical engineer. A lot of active geologists are mechanical engineers because we have the technical background to deal with the structural issues, which is my area of interest, called structural geology.
Huh. Very, very interesting. Well, thank you for setting me straight.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I appreciate that. It's one of those things that I just kind of... I remember when the quake happened in D.C., there was all this speculation around, was it fracking, was it not fracking? There were some people who were positively asserting it was fracking. And I should have drilled down deeper. Although just, one caller to a radio show doesn't necessarily mean it's gospel. But, Dominic, and we had another caller yesterday saying essentially the same thing. So I think that probably I'm wrong about this, that fracking didn't cause the D.C. earthquake. Although it's hard to imagine that fracking in Virginia, which is going on, I believe, Virginia and Maryland, would help it. But who knows? Who knows? Anyhow, we'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Stick around. Tom Hartman broadcasting live from the Families USA Health Action Conference in Washington, D.C. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., and from the Health Action Conference in Washington. I broadcast live from Washington, D.C. every day, but today we're at the Health Action Conference. And taking your calls, Robert in Los Angeles, listening on KPFK. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Basically, what I would suggest is that it is in the best interests of the United States of America and the world to re-legalize marijuana, the beneficial, versatile, historically legal marijuana, cannabis, hemp, plant. The specific re-legalization reasons that I would state and would be prepared to discuss are, freedom of thought, First Amendment, consciousness, self-determination, and individual autonomy, the pursuit of happiness, inconsistent with America's economic system and America's political and social ethic, privacy, justice, Eighth Amendment, Ninth Amendment, equal protection, medicine, food, fuel, fiber, environment, family farms, employment, tax revenues, budget deficit, trade deficit, prosperity, crime, courts, prisons, respect for law, wiser allocation of governmental resources, drug dealing gangs, organized crime, international terrorism, national security, unconstitutional governmental conduct, preventing a totalitarian police state, choosing a freer future, and peace.
Freedom. I love it. I love it. The part I like the most about your riff there, Robert, and it's very, very well written, very well done, and well performed, is the phrase re-legalization. Instead of talking about legalizing drugs, I need to change my vocabulary, and I'm sure it'll take me, you know, many, many efforts to remember to do that on a consistent basis. But the fact of the matter is that all the, you know, during the time of the founding of this country, during the time of the Civil War, during the, you know, for a long, long time, for the vast majority of the history of the United States, all of these substances were legal. And it's only in the last, you know, 3-4 generations that we've gotten all weird and Victorian about these things. So I'm with you. Robert, thanks for listening to KPFK, and thanks for a brilliant call. It's much appreciated. Jonah in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jonah, what's up? Listening on AM 760.
Hi. I was a little bit concerned and have been about healthcare programs just because I'm just concerned about so much being on the Internet, needing to be on the Internet.
You're talking about the Fox News meme that the Affordable Care Act is a terrible thing because when you go on the Internet, people are going to be able to get your health information. Is that what you're talking about?
I hadn't really heard about Fox. I just have already had issues enough with just needing to use things like email for anything.
Yeah. Well, the Internet can be a scary place, and it's not secure. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, though, when you sign up for health insurance with the Affordable Care Act, you don't put your health information on the Internet. You don't. And
oh,
so,
good. And that's my experience, although this kind of reveals something about me, but I'm not using my real first name.
Yeah. Well, that's fine, John. I understand, and some people do that. In fact, a lot of people in my business don't even use their real names.
More by Jonah. It's just that it doesn't feel like it's getting crossover into the area of people I do official business with.
Yeah. No, I got it. Jonah, thanks a lot for the call. It's just, you know, Just know, if you sign up for Obamacare, you're not going to be putting your health records online. Now, there is a whole other, a whole other movement to put health records online, but that's a whole different issue. Jerry in Long Island, New York, listening on WBAI. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing? Yes, speaking of health care, I'd like to discuss both health care and the free trade issue. I know they seem completely unrelated, but I'll relate the two. For instance, when I look at it, when I consider the American job losing the free trade agreements all the way from NAFTA and CAFTA to GATT and that's the general agreement on tariffs and trade and also the Columbia free trade deal. All these so-called free trade deals that so many Democratic lawmakers support and voted for. And also when I look at and consider how few Democratic politicians on a national level have publicly come out in support of a Medicare for all single-payer health care system, after these same lawmakers receive so much campaign money from the private health insurance industry. Mm-hmm. To me, when I look at all this, these examples I gave you, they're just two of many examples and reasons why I think we progressives need to more greatly support more truly independent third-party candidates from the Green Party and also candidates like Bernie Sanders. I mean, can you imagine if we had 50 Bernie Sanders in the U.S. Senate? Mm-hmm. I know Maine has already elected a truly independent Senator Angus King. I don't know how progressive he is, but I think
he's sort of halfway there. He's not Bernie Sanders. He's more like Barry Goldwater in drag, or something like that. Angus King is an interesting
interesting cat. Jerry, I, you know, broadly speaking, I don't disagree with you. I just, I'm wary of the circular firing squad. If you look at the history of this country, you know, look at what happened when Teddy Roosevelt founded the Bull Moose Party. It led to the election of a Republican president, you know, Taft, as I recall. And, you know, you could say, well, okay, Taft was relatively progressive, so that wasn't such a terrible thing. The Republican Party was relatively progressive, or at least there was a large progressive wing of it back then. But still, I'm all in favor of people working, being members of multiple parties, but I really think that the Tea Party has nailed it. I think that when the billionaires said, how do we take control of the Republican Party, we do it by getting inside the Republican Party and taking control of it from the inside. And they've done that to the point now, Jerry, where tomorrow, or Tuesday, when President Obama gives his State of the Union address, there's going to be an official Republican response, which is going to be given by one of the official Republicans. Then there's going to be an official, I forget who it is, you know, some Lindsey Graham type. And then there's going to be a Tea Party response given by Mike Lee. And then there's going to be Rand Paul's response, you know, he was running for president. So it's like, but there's a Tea Party response. Why is there not a progressive party response or a progressive caucus response that's embedded inside the Democratic Party the way that the Tea Party is embedded inside the Republican Party? It's like, you know, this way you get to basically suck up the resources of a multi-billion dollar institution, a political party, and use it for your own purposes. So anyhow, it's a whole other argument for another time. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag your it. Have a great weekend. I'm off to try and thaw some pipes in a frozen boat. We'll see you.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.